Welcome to the panel. My name is Brian Knappenberger. I have a film here at South by Southwest called We Are Legion, The Story of the Hacktivists. We're doing four screenings here and very excited to be here. We had a great screening on Monday where we really packed the Vimeo Theater, and it was a lot of fun. We're doing another one today at 2 o'clock, and we have two more screenings throughout the week. So welcome to the screening. I'm just going to start by showing a little bit. You're good? All right, we can hang on 1 second. We can go. We're live here, right?
Yeah,
you guys see us? So I'm going to start by just introducing the panel, and then I'm going to, which is
the
me,
panel.
Me, and also we have another guest too, and then I'm going to show you a quick trailer of the film so you know what we're talking about. Why don't you come on up?
There we go.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, so let's just kind of go around here. Greg, we'll start with you. This is Greg Hausch. He's a major figure in our film, and you describe how your connection to Anonymous.
I was around, near the beginning of everything. I've been around Anonymous since 06, the first time I ever really got involved in any of the more fun stuff back then. And in early 08, I took part in Chanology. YouTube videos like Message to Scientology and all of those are on my YouTube account, and that really pissed Scientology off. And taking part in a lot of the early organization and a lot of the, I guess what you could call branding of Anonymous and kind of the building of the mythos here, got them really angry with me. And they ended up using private investigators to hunt me down. And they outed me all over the internet, and they went to the press, and they filed lawsuits. They did everything they could. And I learned something very interesting that week, that once you have a name, the press won't leave you alone.
So people like me bug you to hear your story. Yeah.
And most of the press can't print anonymous sources is one of the things I learned. There's a lot of editors out there who won't accept it. So a lot of the press were getting our story wrong. They weren't understanding what we were doing. They were saying things like religious bigots, all these other things that were wrong. So I decided to answer the questions. And that, of course, just led to more and more and more. And in the end, I'm 4 years later, and I'm still doing interviews every few days.
I want to get more into Chanology maybe in a bit. Mm-hmm. I want to introduce Anon 9000. Can you hear us? Can we hear you? All right. How do I introduce you?
I don't know. I'm just one of I don't know how many Anons there are. I'm just one person. I mostly focus on censorship. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Can everybody understand?
Yeah.
I can't see if they're nodding yes or no, but I'll just...
No, it's good. We can all see you.
Yeah, so I mostly focus on censorship. I'm not what you would call a hacker in the sense that that I do illegal things, because I don't. But as Greg says, once you have a name, the press won't leave you alone. And for that reason, and that reason alone, for the most part, I'm anonymous. I don't want my personal life to be spilled, and I just want to fight censorship. And anonymous was the outlet I chose to do that. And I started in December 2010, right around the time that PayPal decided to be used as a tool of the state to censor WikiLeaks and all of the corruption that they were trying to reveal to the public.
Yeah. A lot of people started at that moment. A lot of people that I've talked to, that was a big resurgence of people identifying as anonymous.
And it just so happens that PayPal is in the news today for freezing another account of some guy. I tweeted about it earlier, but it just reveals that PayPal's business strategy is to freeze your account and then earn interest on the money that was in your account, and I think that's just really shady.
Right. Great. We'll return to that if we have. We'll keep an eye on the time and get back to that. I want to introduce you, who I've just met. So how should we refer to you?
I'd like to just be referred to as Anonymous today.
And you, I met you because you're part of a kind of recent movement, which is Occupy. You're part of Austin Occupy.
That's right. I'm a member of Occupy Austin. I joined in early November, about a month after the movement started here. I've been following Anonymous for a long time, but it's only in the last 4 months that I've interacted directly with my fellow Anons. As an occupier, I'm pretty public, but I do wear the mask in solidarity with Anonymous and that movement.
So I'm going to introduce you to our film by way of the trailer. Do we need any sound difference, or is that kind of just play
it and see what happens?
Let me turn up the sound a little bit. It should be good. This is a trailer for our film, so this is to give you a sense of what we're up to.
The computer hacker group Anonymous is claiming tonight that it took down the website of the Federal Appeals Court in San Francisco this afternoon.
They took down Senate.gov servers. They've taken down H.B. Gary. Sony's claiming they did $150 million worth of damage.
So many confidential files that tonight, because of these hackers, can be in the hands of anyone.
Oh, Visa, sorry. MasterCard, the PayPal situation.
The criminals who hacked into Sarah Palin's private email.
The Church of Scientology says Anonymous is a cyber terrorist group of religious bigots.
Anonymous and this other group called Lulz Sec. They seem to be wanting to prove a point.
Anonymous kind of was like the big, strong, buff kid who had low self-esteem. And then all of a sudden punched somebody in the face and was like, holy shit, I'm really strong. Anonymous calls itself the final boss of the internet, and sometimes it proves to be really fucking true. You are going to violate the freedoms of the internet, you certainly better watch the fuck out.
They are kind of the rude boys of activism. There's a real rough edge to them, which I think also is one reason why they garner so much love and hate from people, too. They represent a certain sort of chaotic freedom.
The hacker ethos has a passion for truth. It wants what's real to be out there. And it uses kind of the Philip K. Dick definition of reality. And reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, refuses to go away.
We stand for freedom. We stand for freedom of speech, the power of the people, the ability for them to protest against the government, to right wrongs. No censorship, especially online, but also in real life.
We have members throughout society and all stratas of it worldwide, yet we have no leadership.
It's a one voice. It's not individual voices. That's why we don't show our faces. That's why we don't give our names. We're speaking as one, and it's a collective. Good timing.
So the FBI shows up at 6 in the morning and they drag me out into the cold and there's guns and a little LED flashlight in the vest. It was really obnoxious. If you so much as sneeze on someone's tablet and the government's not happy about it, then you're a hacker.
There's people that are dying for a flag and they're being lied to. And maybe it's time for a new law. If I get the chance to do that, then so be it. And if 14 other people that are with me get a chance to do it, then so be it.
You want to see Anonymous rise up? Try to shut down the message. Try to squash the message. Try to chill our speech. Then you'll see what Anonymous can do.
Right now, you could argue that the most powerful people on Earth are a bunch of nameless, faceless 17 to 35-year-olds. It's like the hacker ruling class, right?
It's my community. It's my culture. I identify with Anonymous.
Whether they had a tiny part, whether they had a substantive part, an Arab Spring or toppling of Tunisia and Egyptian governments, individual, young, nameless, faceless folks are having geopolitical impact. It's both exhilarating to realize that and terrifying to realize that. It kind of depends on how that power is wielded.
All right. There's a thank you.
Well done.
I'm just going to give you a quick, just talk really briefly about, okay, there we go. How the film started. I personally, the first time I ever heard about Anonymous was when they attacked the Church of Scientology and Chanology, which is what Greg was just talking about. And I was kind of amazed, mesmerized by what was going on. And but didn't start the documentary until they attacked MasterCard, Visa, and PayPal in December of 2010 in protest for those companies cutting off financial services to WikiLeaks. And that's when this documentary started in earnest. And so I've been following Anonymous and the hacktivists, other groups like Telecomics, for about a year, about a year and a half, I guess. And it's been a hell of a year. They've been on a kind of rampage during that time. So the effort of the documentary is to understand where they came from, what they want, and to basically listen to. I didn't think anything had been done. You see a lot of press stories about that are sensational, and I don't think anything had been done where you're kind of trying to figure out where it came from and what it is. I believe it's a culture, and so this is an attempt to define that culture. We actually had an agenda, but I want to also start with, it seems like every time we have a major screening of the film, something big happens with Anonymous, to say the least. We took this film to Park City, and on the trip there was the DDoS blackout for SOAP. The DDoS of SOAP, a blackout had happened the day before. Turns out those are the biggest DDoS attacks in history up until this point. South by Southwest didn't disappoint. Last week was a big, lots of development. So I kind of want to talk about that. Yep. The biggest one is a figure that maybe I can help you guys can help me understand his place. Certainly there are no leaders in Anonymous. I'm talking, of course, about Sabu, who was arrested last week. He was certainly the leader of LulzSec. It's a bit tough to use that word. It's kind of a dirty word. A powerful figure. Just to sort of say a little bit, I don't know if, just to paint the basic picture, he has been a powerful, provocative figure on the scene within the last year. Very controversial, including within Anonymous. And yet... I always liken watching his Twitter feed to watching a fist fight or something. It's hard to describe his personality, but as it turns out, he was
vocal and angry.
And responded to any slight with a string of obscenities, and yet somehow you couldn't take your eyes off him. Bottom line is, it turns out he's a gentleman named Hector Monsegur, living in a housing project in development in Lower East Side Manhattan. And he was an FBI informant for a good part of the last year. So Anonymous is reacting to that news, I would say. Greg, you can start. Tell me what kind of figure was Sabu.
Sabu was very vocal. He was very good at recruiting. A lot of people would read what he had to say about the world and would think, I believe that. You know, what else is going on? And they'd go find other things to do with Anonymous. But beyond that, he had actually, gotten pretty skilled at some of the things he was doing, getting into websites, things like that. I wouldn't say it was necessarily in the true form of a lot of hackers that'll, get down to a root shell and whatnot. He was doing a lot of SQLi stuff, things like that. But he'd gotten really good at getting in and making it really sensational and getting the press to follow. And that was important. I mean, when you look at a lot of what he did, it actually just was to draw the press in. And a lot of Anons liked him for that, liked that he drew a lot of attention to what was going on. But at the same point, a lot of Anons hated him. He was a complete ass and would do things that most of them didn't agree with. There's a surprising amount of people on the Anonymous side that don't agree with a lot of the dumps of personal information of the public. You know, I kind of ride the fence on that one. But it's an interesting character that is Hector, and the fact that he is an informant is also interesting in that when he was busted, there were a few Anons who spoke very clearly to the fact that this guy's acting a lot stranger this week after disappearing for a few days. Where was he? What's going on? And I actually found some tweets just from those few days of when we now know he was actually arrested way back when, of people claiming that he was arrested, that they knew he was, that why doesn't he come out with it? And I let everyone
June,
convince me that that I was wrong. I let everyone convince me that the gut feeling that I had and that all these other people had that he had been arrested was wrong, because so many other people wouldn't believe it. So when this happened and we find out, you know, last week that he was actually an informant, the first thing, you know, all the people who were talking about it back then said was, well, damn it. You know, some people actually said this and no one believed. And the next thing that everyone said was, well, this came out on Fox News, so it can't be true. It took us a few hours to actually believe it, because we waited for NPR and all these other places to actually report and swear up and down that they had sources of their own. And at that point, then people started to believe and started to go back through their chat history. What did I say to this man over the last 4 months?
Am I in trouble?
Does
right?
he know my name?
Yeah.
You know, that was an interesting day on IRC watching them all do that.
As an observer of Anonymous over the last year, and I have talked to Sabu a number of times on IRC and once even on the phone. The most controversial aspects of what he brought, and I'm talking about the discussion within Anonymous, everybody else too, fall into two categories. What you just alluded to, that large-scale doxing of personal information of members of the public that may not be a part of the confrontation or maybe innocent bystanders. I have talked to a lot of people who identify as Anonymous who say anything we do needs to minimize that, right? Minimize the releasing of
personal
information.
Minimize the effect on the actual public. And yet, you want to win them over to your side, not
exactly.
Convince them that you're evil.
And the idea is not to hurt people that, you know, innocence. Some people feel very, very, very strongly about that. And yet, Sabu clearly didn't feel that way.
It's interesting having that conversation with him specifically, and even back when Kayla was around and all of them, you know, I sat in the middle of a conversation they had about this, and they justified it to themselves by saying that no matter how many times you go to these people and you explain that giving this information to this website means the bad hackers, the people who are going to use it for identity theft, the people who are going to take your credit card and defraud you, they already have it. If we got in, this is their argument, then someone else beat us to it already, and we're just proving the point that we got in. And telling you that, we get ignored. Telling the press that, no one wants to hear it, they don't print it. So we have to dump your data, or you're not going to believe that it's already out there before we dumped it.
Yeah, that's the argument.
That was the argument that they gave, and it's a tough one to argue with when you hear it. They're very convincing. But that's, again, why I'm on the fence. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand that, you know, getting the news to cover the fact that this site that has everyone's credit card isn't secure and we can prove it doesn't work until you prove it.
Yeah. That's a hacker ethos that kind of goes back pre-Anonymous, I think.
Goes back pretty far.
Yeah. The other thing I want to get to quickly, and then I want to ask Anon 9000. This is the first time I've called you that, by the way. Anon 9000, the second most controversial thing I think you could say about that people argued about with Sabu is attacking the press. You know, there are people that feel very, very, very strongly. It's hard to this is a freedom of speech group, and they believe, you know, attacking the press is wrong. We're a freedom of speech group. That's total hypocrisy. And again, Sabu and Lulzsec had no problem. I mean, full disclosure, I've made a couple front lines myself as a documentary filmmaker, and they attacked Frontline for a story that they did.
That Tupac story was hilarious, though.
Well, that's the thing. It is hilarious.
it's hard to
just so people know, if you don't know what that story is, Frontline did a story about Bradley Manning. Lulzsec, members of Lulzsec, other members of Anonymous, were upset at the psychologizing of Bradley Manning instead of focusing more on what he did and what the documents meant and all of that. So Lulzsec took down the McNeil Lair News Hour. Actually, just posted a new news story in the McNeil Lair News Hour of their own that announced that Tupac and Biggie were actually, in fact, alive and residing in New Zealand. So, and it was just straight up News Hour.
It looked real.
Yeah, it was genuinely funny. But that's the other thing. attacking the press.
You know, whenever that comes up on IRC, whenever you're watching any of the ops form, and especially when the press says something bad about Anonymous, there will be someone in the channels who says very clearly, we should attack that person. There's always that idiot. And I do refer to him as that idiot because I think it's the dumbest thing we could possibly do. I think Anonymous should not be attacking the press. Again, you know, if I ever agreed with that, I would have to start to reconsider my thoughts on free speech. You know, my ideology would completely have to flip for me to agree with this. And the surprising response is, shut up, get out of here, kick banning, being kicked off the servers. I mean, really, people who say that get treated wrong. And it's kind of one of the explanations for where LulzSec kind of appeared. You know, they split off and did all of that stuff and then kind of disappeared and slowly came back in. And after the few members of them that really started the anti-sec movement were, you know, again, part of anti-sec, you'll notice that stuff stopped. You know, they tried to do all that stuff that most of us and most of the people, you know, like our friend on Skype here, would not have agreed with under a different name. And I think that was on purpose.
I want to get your opinion on the events of last week, Anon 9000. What's your take on how that went down and what it means?
Well, I think it's interesting that Sabu, I feel like his rhetoric was amped up after he reappeared from being arrested. He was more provocative in speech and in action, I feel. And there was even, you know, I heard a story that he offered to pay someone to do a hack for him, which I think raises interesting questions about how much input the FBI had on his actions. What that means for the people who may be implicated along with him. But to answer your question, I disagree. I disagree with attacking the press. I disagree with dumping people's data. I feel, you know, when I got into this, I felt like Anonymous was a group of groups who fought for the users. You know, we fight for the users, and to see people getting DDoSed and censored wide-scale by, you know, a few people. I'm with Greg. I'm on the fence about DDoS. There's a pretty good argument that it's a form of censorship.
DDoS, denial of service attacks.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it's a tough one to really navigate through. I mean, we're not as rational as we think we are, but we are rationalizing. We like to rationalize our actions.
well put. One more thought on just to play on what you just said on Sabu, and I want to move on. I'm realizing we don't actually have a lot of time. You're right. I do think just observing this, he did seem like his rhetoric amped up. When he came back, he left for a period of about a month. His Twitter, which is usually, you know, 20 tweets a day, it just went dark for a month and a half. And when he came back, it did seem amped up. And you do have a very strange situation where you have somebody who's instigating illegal activity and working for the FBI. So I think there are issues of entrapment for those people that have been arrested last week in connection with some of these stuff, anti-sec members and other people that were working with Sabu. Not being a lawyer myself, I only know a couple things about this. I think they have to prove inducement, that he induced them for illegal acts. That seems pretty clear to me that he was doing that. But they also have to prove predisposition, which means that the person committing that act was not already predisposed to do it. And some cases that might be more difficult.
The issue we have there is that, you know, in some of these cases, you know, again, I observe a lot, and I seem to have decent access to where all these people are, and I watched, and some of these people that did get arrested would not have done the hacks that they did for the simple reason that half of the ones arrested, he taught how to do them after he was already an FBI informant, then showed them targets that were available, and then they went and used what he taught them on the target that he pointed out under FBI, you know, watch. And
right.
entrapment is one of the hardest things to prove. For every 1,000 cases that go, you know, before with the defense of entrapment, one is successful. It's a very hard one to prove, even with evidence. So who knows how far that argument goes. Some lawyers won't even bring it because they know how hard it is to prove. But most of these cases are interesting in that respect.
The issue of Sabu brings up this kind of one of the sort of weaknesses of Anon, which is that anybody can do it, and it's prone to agent provocateurs like him.
Yeah, any one person can co-opt Anonymous and do something that will get press attention and just completely derail a year's worth of you know, good hard work that Anonymous has done to fight censorship and corruption.
Yeah. And you tweeted about this yesterday. You denounced what happened yesterday, which almost seems to fall in the same category, which is somebody claiming to be anonymous. They took down the British equivalent of Planned Parenthood. They defaced the site, stole some information, I think, of women that were inquiring about information, inquiring about it. So, which is a really ugly situation, and I know you came out yesterday and just said this is ridiculous. But people can do that. People can co-opt it for a day and make it and sort of
right.
pull those kind of stuff.
That's the double-edged sword of Anonymous, right? You know, it can do good, but it can also do bad. And anybody can claim to be anonymous and do anything they want for political reasons, however crazy they may be, and cite them to Anonymous, and then easily. Like you said, it could be a false flag option, you know, operation where someone wants to make Anonymous look bad, so they do something like this.
Yeah.
It's easy to do. Anyone can do it.
Yeah. All right. I want to get you in this. I think we only have we don't have a lot more time. We want to open this up to questions if people have questions. But explain, how did you get involved in Anonymous, and what has your... You know, the issue of Anonymous, I get asked this all the time, what was their role in Occupy? And I always think that it's a really kind of fascinating role, almost like a tech support kind of assistant, a kind of certainly megaphone. Maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
It's a little bit like living in a science fiction novel right now that we have, you know, occupiers. It almost feels sometimes like we have this hacker army that is sort of our tech support. That's a great way to put it. I've only in the last 4 months been interacting directly with Anonymous, but I've watched them for a long time. I was involved in the tech industry. And it was really fascinating to me to see sort of this undirected nerd rage that would sort of be like, let's go attack this message board, let's go attack this website, suddenly sort of through Scientology and then Occupy become this directed force, at least partially, although we were just talking, of course, how sort of everyone's anonymous. When I got involved with Occupy is when I started directly interacting with them, mostly via Twitter. And I've made a number of Anonymous contacts. My most dramatic interaction with Anonymous, I think, came at the beginning of February. We'd had a full day of action at Occupy Austin, a day against actually the NDAA, which is a big target of Anonymous. And we'd had a march, we had several marches, a big action, we all went home. And then we all got the phone call that we were about to be evicted from City Hall. And for those that don't know, we held City Hall for almost 4 months, the steps, continuously as occupiers. They gave us about half an hour's warning that we were going to be evicted. So, of course, we all bundled down there as fast as we can. And we decided what we were going to do is something called the Portland Lap, which is an Occupy tactic that was started in Portland, obviously, where when the police come to kick you out, instead of staying and getting arrested, you literally pick up your tents and start marching through the streets with them. And so we did that. We waited until the last moment. There were several arrests on the City Hall Plaza, but the bulk of us left and entered the streets. And we were marching through 6th Street and down here by the Convention Center, over, I think, on the Red River side or by the 35 Frontage Road. And we were suddenly ambushed by police while we were on the sidewalk. And one of our members who was being charged... they were basically framing him because he was wearing a bandana on his face. They grabbed him, threw him down on the sidewalk, and were very roughly arresting him. And we surrounded and began chanting, shame, shame, as we often do, to the police, who do you protect? At that point, an officer jumped out and threatened us with a pepper spray can. He was maybe as close as you, maybe as Greg's distance, but he had his arm out, you know, so it was right up in our face. And he said, you know, I'm going to pepper spray all of you if you don't stop. And, you know, we saw his name. He hadn't covered his badge name number. And after they finished the arrest and backed off, I stepped forward out of the crowd, and I knew we had live streamers with us who had a lot of viewers. And I said, "Officer Jason Mistrick," and I read his badge number. I said, "We have your name and number. It's on the internet, and Anonymous is going to dox you within hours. All your personal details will be everywhere within hours." And they were.
Yep.
And I mean, I felt like a superhero. Right. It was probably my greatest moment as an occupier. I could step forward, and that someone who had threatened us unreasonably, we were not being violent, we were not trying even to unarrest, as sometimes does happen. We were just watching and calling them out on their behavior of arresting someone on a sidewalk. And I was able to call on Anonymous and know that they would deliver. And it was a really powerful moment. And I think also for the occupation, it helped us know that we had this backup, that we had Anonymous who had our back, who is watching us, who are Legion, and that all of us are Anonymous. And within hours, we not only had his personal details, but we had information about some of his other crimes. Jason Mistrick has a history of harassing critical mass cyclists here and other poor behavior. And so we knew about all of that. We're able to call him on it. Now we show up at City Hall meetings where he sometimes is security and talk to him or have signs of him holding the pepper spray can to our faces.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great story. And that's the kind of story you heard a lot at Occupy. There's the famous Tony Baloney incident in New York, where the woman, we've seen these images of her being behind the stanchions, just being hammered with pepper spray, and Anonymous finding out who that was, and I think he was fired, if I'm not mistaken.
He was on suspension, as I understood. On suspension.
So it's an interesting role. We could do a whole panel on that probably, but
it's probably time for questions at this point.
Yeah, let's see. 20, yeah, well, let's do a couple more things. I want to ask you a quick question about Chenology, which we were going before, and then I want to make sure to get to some of the SOPA stuff. Having followed Anonymous since Scientology, I was a lot of people had joined the movement like around Occupy even, and I asked somebody about Scientology, and they said and they weren't aware that that's where Anonymous had gotten its roots. With a mask and everything.
It's a lot of that.
So how important was... I think this is a seminal moment for the development of Anonymous. Put that into words. How important is Chenology to the kind of history of it?
I think the importance of Chenology was really that the internet hadn't been used in that way. You know, just to say it, when we posted the Message to Scientology video... We didn't expect more than 100 people to show up on IRC. You know, we thought a troll would happen for a couple days.
Can I interrupt you for a second? What was the instigating? Tell me what initially angered.
The instigation was the Tom Cruise video. There was a hilarious Tom Cruise video, short clip, and it was under the time limit, so it was fair use to be posted. So Scientology went up and started removing it from the websites that it got posted on by filing lawsuits, threatening lawyers, filing DMCA claims. And that's censorship. And, you know, if any of you come see the documentary later, you hear people go on a little longer about, you know, that reasoning. But the basics were, here you are on our turf censoring things that you don't have any legal right to censor. Well, that pissed us all off. So we decided to go repost the video everywhere that we possibly could. That made them more angry, and we just went back and forth a little. And we decided that it would be funny to actually, you know, put out this ominous video that said that, you know, the internet was coming and we were going to destroy you. And it was a troll. It was, you know, we thought it would last a couple weeks. And what did we know? Because I go to bed that night after it gets uploaded, and I get woken up in the morning by my girlfriend yelling and screaming that the servers are all down. We had accidentally DDoSed ourselves. So many people had come to the chat servers that the chat servers weren't staying up. There were about 10,000 people actually attempting to connect and chat in one channel on IRC. And if any of you ever used IRC, you know, even over 100 people trying to talk, and it's scrolling by so fast that you can't even see what you said. So we had to get in there and try and figure out, how do you organize this many people worldwide? How do you get them to kind of segregate themselves into smaller chat groups? And all these other things that happened over those next few days. And really, it was kind of the culmination of all of that and what we figured out over those days that led to only, you know, 2 weeks later 10,000 people in the streets in 143 cities in 42 countries. There was no money. There was no central website. There was no company behind this organization. It just happened. You know, every step of the way, I can recount every day as we planned this out, it was an accident. And then we followed it up by luckily getting it right. Looking back, you know, during it, we had no idea if we were getting it right. But it was the real first time that Anonymous showed its face out in the world in a big way that everyone got to see.
Or that the internet had called people in that mass forward for a protest like that.
Yeah, it was really the first time that also, I mean, a protest like that had come out of the internet and really gone to the streets.
Also, for the development, as you know, the film, we're looking at the kind of history of these things. That seems one of the amazing kind of moments in the film is when people talk about what it was like to actually see each other in real life for the first time. That this was, it was in a sense...
Meeting your friends that you had never met and gotten to talk to was very interesting.
Yeah.
People who all were just that little anonymous name on these websites that now, you know, might not have faces because most of them are masked, but you at least get to stand there and talk to them. It was interesting, you know, meeting so many people that had the same sense of humor as you, you know, somewhat dark, you know, and who had seen all the things on 4chan that can never be unseen. And, you know, you got to sit there.
Come to the film, you'll see a few.
Yeah, you get to sit there and talk with these people and get along with them. And, you know, you included my favorite part in the film, so.
Yeah, which is... Oh.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that, that he actually included in the film that I didn't know was on the record when we were talking about it, but I didn't care that it went in, was, you know, one of the interesting things that happened at those original Chanology protests was all these, you know, guys, you know, especially the younger guys, who were masked up and might have been a little socially awkward, might have been the guys who really spent most of their time on the internet, came out, and they were able to talk and, you know, be interactive with all these people in public because their faces were covered. They were willing to, you know, be a lot more forward. And it turned out that there were a lot of good-looking women, too. It was surprising that the split was actually, like, in half. I mean, in Boston, we had 280
misconceptions,
people.
Right? Big misconceptions about Anonymous,
yeah.
That it's all sort of 12-year-old boys.
We had 280 people in Boston, and it was
easily
150 of them were women. And so they all got to talking behind the masks, and they were much more open and free with each other. And, you know, 6 months in, there were two weddings at protests from people who had met at the first one, and thousands of, you know, these virgin geeks had been laid. I mean, I thought that was one of the best parts of the protest.
It's a great moment. Yeah, it's a great moment in Anon history.
Yeah.
Anon 9000, I want to get to you and SOPA. This is a big part of what Anonymous has done this year, and you feel very strongly about this. Can you... put it into context for us. Tell us about what's wrong and what Anonymous did.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yep.
Can everybody see me or just you? I don't know what people are seeing.
Yeah.
Everybody sees you.
You can't see the crowd. They can see you.
Yeah, so I don't, you know, this is South by Southwest, so I assume that most of you, or at least some of you, are somewhat familiar with SOPA and the fact that it was a bill put forward by Lamar Smith in Texas. And it was, you know, it's basically, you know, internet censorship. And, you know, we have Anonymous to thank. We have Google and Wikipedia and a ton of other websites to thank, Reddit included, to thank for, you know, helping us carry this information forward. And I think 2012 and forward, we're going to see the importance of public awareness and we're going to highlight that this is an info war, and that we have to fight against our own government to show people what the truth is about these legislative bills for censorship. You think SOPA was bad? There's like two or three brothers. There's a big brother in Europe called ACTA, A-C-T-A. I can't take credit for this, but Anonymous was very, very strong in tweeting about it and getting information about it. And within 2 days, there was a huge street protest in Poland. I don't know if you can see the photo, but
yeah. Oh,
that's
glad
just
you
one
have
of the
that.
Pictures of people in the state. You know, Anonymous helped get this forward, and they also, I think, DDoSed the Poland's government websites.
Yeah,
and then the government took notice, and they started reading about ACTA, and realizing that the public was not in favor of this, and Poland, I don't know if they ratified, but they signed it, and the parliament in Poland got so upset about it that they themselves protested.
I'm so glad you have that image.
In session.
Can you just hang on that image for a second, and let's just absorb this. This is the Polish parliament identifying with Anonymous.
Yeah, this is huge.
Feels kind of strange.
Just take a second here.
It's strange bedfellows, but right, I mean, it's 2012. It's an election season in the U.S. I think Anon needs to get more politically involved. Because really, that's the battle for the truth and for the battle for democracy. And all the censorship, legislative attempts that are going on right now are just a way to squash the truth and subvert democracy.
Yeah. This is a group, stay with this image for just a second. Keep in mind, Anonymous, a few years previous to this, is posting disgusting things on 4chan, is coming up with Rick Rolling, which is doing lolcats. And fast forward to this image, what the hell's going on here?
Like, that's the same question we all asked ourselves when we saw that image. Like, you know, yeah. I remember the night that we argued over which mask we were going to go with for the first protest, and I still have the actual Google Doc where we had the checklists of which masks we were choosing, and when we chose this one. And when I saw this, the first thing I thought was about that night, and honestly, how messed up it is that this is going on.
They've come in this amount of time. How far and how much it's changed.
Very short amount of time to end up, you know, from where we were that night to this.
Yeah, amazing. So the other thing, Anon 9000, it occurs to me that you know, big internet companies, Google, Wikipedia, Flickr, many others, participated in the SOPA blackout, but. You and others were talking about it because I was there observing long before this became part of the public discussion. And I will go so far as to say I don't think anybody would have heard about it if you guys weren't so relentless about it.
That's the key is being you have to be relentless. And you have to drain every bit of your energy focusing on it and researching it. And I certainly didn't do it alone. Greg can attest to that. There were other people involved who spent far more hours researching and digging and finding out that USTR, for instance, and TPP was kicking out NGOs at hotels because they didn't want them to find out about these meetings going on, figuring out how to do censorship and how to get it deployed. And they were doing it. They even had things that were secret. Let me see if I can find some information on that. There was a secret memo. There was a memo declaring the discussions about TPP as secret, and even the memo itself was secret. Cory Doctorow called it the most batshit insane proposal of the decade. He's talking about TPP. Mm-hmm. It's the evil big brother to SOPA, and it's going to come if we don't start giving it some attention.
Right.
This leads back to the DDoS discussion, though. I will say that the first anti-ACTA website that Anonymous actually put up was surprisingly a year and a half ago, long before all of this was going on, and no one cared.
Yeah.
We went to the press. I actually helped them set up their hosting to get that site alive and everything. And, I've been in the press enough that I have personal phone numbers. I was calling people begging, please cover this. No one cared. And, so people kind of gave up. I mean, the site sort of stayed updated. And then this next round of, attention from Anonymous started to happen. And those people, again, showed back up. Here's a site, all the right information, all the original copies, the newer copies, everything that's been ratified. And the press still didn't care. And so what did Anonymous do to get the press to care? They DDoSed a bunch of websites. And in the end, those DDoSes were specifically meant just to get the press to print the damn story. A lot of the DDoSes that happen from Anonymous have nothing to do with taking down that person's website. It's meaningless. Some of the websites you take down for half an hour, what does that do? It accomplishes nothing. But what it does accomplish is this, three or four paragraphs that you sent to the press saying this needs to be covered, it's important, that they ignored. Well, now a story comes out with a paragraph and a half about the DDoS and then what you wanted them to say. And so the DDoSes are going to continue to happen because it seems to be the only way Anonymous can convince the press to actually print anything.
Yeah, it's the only thing the press cares about.
Yeah.
They think that a DDoS is a hack, but, you know, it's whatever. So people are getting involved because the press is talking about something that we want more people to understand.
Those are very different things. Yeah. There is a difference, though. I mean, the DDoSes in that case in SOPA did happen after the SOPA blackout, which is a grassroots choice. I mean, people were volunteering to black out their Twitter, their Flickr accounts, things like that. These are individuals participating in that. And to go back to your point about people being there before and people not caring, not to stir up trouble, but Google has a big lobbyist presence in Washington. You didn't hear a lot about this from them until the tipping point started happening.
Most of those companies that joined on didn't join on until the press was already starting to pay a little attention.
I don't want to.
They were
helpful, but
it was good that they signed on. But yeah, there was definitely some press attention that brought them along.
Yeah, but there is something about that message that continuous kind of pounding of that message that turned the tables there. So we have 7-8 minutes. So let's open this up.
Let's do questions.
Anybody have a question?
There's two mics here, so everyone can hear you.
Just come on up. Great.
One thing you guys were paying on was great. I think a lot of what Anonymous is doing is very similar to what was happening in the civil rights movement. And I think, I think there's a lot to do with fear as far as Anonymous, the fear of censorship, the fear of what the other side of people who are controlling, who we don't know what's happening, what they're doing with that control. And I think the fear-mongering that Anonymous is creating on the other side is one of the same things that stopped a lot of people in the civil rights movement from doing the same thing, creating that fear on the other side. So explain if you guys have any strategies in the future of that fear-mongering, creating that to the other side, kind of like what the Anonymous guy was saying about the police officer.
I think this would be a good one.
Yeah.
Did you actually hear that?
I think so. Something to do with fear-mongering on our side to get people
Yeah, do you feel like you can take it? The comparison, I can just say the comparison to the civil rights movement, there's a lot of people compare DDoS to a sit-in, a virtual sit-in. So people often make comparisons to protests that happened in the 60s.
I mean, what's really different from, Barack Obama sitting talking at a State of the Union address and saying, call your legislators, slam the phone banks. What's different?
Tie up those phone lines, right.
And 1,000 people... I'm speaking, sending political speech digitally to web servers.
Mm-hmm.
People who are, what's the difference between that and 500 people jamming in a door at Christmas time, DDoSing the front doors? They're all very similar. You can argue it that way, at least for DDoS.
What about fear-mongering here, both sides?
Yeah, I think what I try to do is focus on what evidence we have that shows corruption and censorship. Not so much what we think they're going to do, but what they have done in the past and even very recently. But they have done what we have proven, what we have seen them do, and try to, discredit them, basically. Just discredit, elements within the government who are corrupt.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to focus on.
I think in the end, the thing that we have on our side is that when Anonymous does go after someone, when whoever's on this side, Anonymous, Telecom, people like me who aren't actually doing a lot of the illegal acts but are around all of this, a lot of what goes forward is the truth from this side with proof, if we can't really prove it, well, then here's all of their emails that prove exactly what we're saying. On their side, it's nothing but fear-mongering. You look to a couple weeks ago when the NSA put out that report about the power grid. That will never happen. One of the big things that we always talk about on this side is you don't go after the public. You want them on your side. You want to win. If you cut the power grid, people on life support are going to die. I mean, what use is that
computers
to
the
fight?
The internet's going to go down.
There's an interesting point about that, because the only person I heard from Anonymous who actually said that they could hack into serious systems and take out the power grid was Sabu.
Who was working for the government,
So interesting. I wonder, did they feed him that tweet to say, and then did they hand that over to the NSA and say, hey, publish a story, push a story to the press that says that Anonymous is going to hack the power grid?
Yeah, I will add one final piece to that one. Last year, the NSA put forward a suggestion to the government that the security of the national power grid be nationalized and it be brought all together under one organization, and it fell on deaf ears. No one cared. No one listened. The senators ignored it. And then, you know, they have Sabu under their control, and they come out fear-mongering saying Anonymous is going to attack it. I think they were honestly just trying to raise more support for their idea of nationalizing the security of the power grid.
Yeah, they were trying to fabricate political will, basically.
Yeah.
So, next
question.
Thanks for the panel, and the movie's amazing. Go see it if you get a chance.
Oh, thanks. That's a plug for the film. Yeah. we like that.
So there's obviously some very clear ideals, democracy, equality, fighting censorship. You know, there's a code of conduct issued for Chenology. Has there been talk of issuing a code of conduct online, being that's the general domain that's being worked in?
I haven't seen talk about that. You know, one of the interesting things we had, you know, at the beginning of Chenology was a very, very small group of people. I mean, you know, before we actually put out those few videos, the biggest IRC that had Anons on it had 30 people in a channel. You know, there weren't, you know, and the channel that actually made those videos when we first started that, there were 5 of us in there. So when we made the code of conduct, I think it was all of 8 people who took part in putting that video together. And it was actually at the prompting of an old school activist who came on saying, are you stupid sending people like that to these buildings? Some of them are going to bring bricks. They're going to yell at the cops. Please, for the love of God, put out something telling them what not to do. And he then gave us a short list of things that he thought would be good, and we agreed, and we kind of fleshed it out a little and changed it and put it out. But the problem we have now is that there's so many separate groups. You know, there's 100 IRCs I could go to, 1,000 channels, you know, so many different people that you put it out and you might get 5% of the people to pay attention at best. And the others all attack you for trying to give them rules to live by. Back then it was relatively simple. You know, at this point it's much more complex to get away with that.
Dennis? Yeah.
Hey, so you mentioned at the showing that you had considered making changes to the film based on the actions of last week with Sabu and stuff.
Yeah.
And you mentioned today that pretty much every time you have a showing, you have changes that happen. How does that work for you as a director?
Mm-hmm.
Because pretty much this isn't going to stop.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving target.
Yeah. So the movie, you want to keep it relevant, you want to keep it current.
Yeah.
But you have to release it in full at some point, I'm assuming.
I have to stop at some point. Yeah. I have to stop finishing it. I think, you know, I've done a number of things that you might. I kind of call this a historical documentary. It is a historical documentary. I've done this a number of times, and there's always a kind of balance between what new news story is, because it seems like it's the most important thing in the world for when it's happening, and 2 weeks later maybe it's gone, and yet some of those things are significant. So I'm often in the position of weighing the current news cycle in the broad scope of a story, and I do think that the events of Sabu and his being an informant for the FBI does warrant sort of breaking back into the film and doing it. Otherwise, you know, Anonymous will continue to do raids and we'll have action. We'll take up causes.
And you get part 2.
And yeah, maybe part 2, maybe a sequel. But you know, I think this has been the last year and a half has been a particularly transformative time for Anonymous. Lots has gone on. A lot of things have gone on. And so this, I think, is a time capsule of that period of change and these series of events and an attempt to understand that. And I think that there will be relevance to this last year and a half for a while, in my opinion. Yeah.
Hi. My name's Cole. I wrote a book about Anonymous that came out in September. And,
yes.
Could I cut you off for 1 second, Cole?
Yeah,
I didn't reach back out to you after your blog post when the press did what they did, because I didn't want to fuel the fire. Those comments were taken so out of context. If I could give you the transcripts of what actually happened that day, where I said it was so great that so many books were coming out and all that person was trying to start a fight between us, and I wanted nothing to do with the fight.
Oh, we can't stop now. It's Cole.
So I just want you to know that.
I really appreciate that.
They're giving
that.
Us the wave out. I
just want
I promise.
You to know that. And I remember the conversation we had before, you know, the book was done and everything.
Let's hear.
That means a lot to me. I appreciate that. if I do have time to ask a question,
they're waving us out. Yes, but yes. We got to include this.
In doing research for the book, I spoke to a lot of security experts, people who work in the security industry, and the impression that I got is that the reason why a lot of these Anons haven't been put in jail yet is not because they're these elite badasses, but because the FBI doesn't have the resources to take away from fighting actual threats like Al-Qaeda and going after every 14-year-old kid. Not to say that Anonymous is all 14-year-old kids.
Yeah.
But I guess, like, after these recent arrests, we've seen that there's probably some truth to that. And Anonymous, at least the hacktivism element of Anonymous, may have been completely infiltrated. And if they haven't yet, then they might be in future months. And I guess I'm just wondering...
Maybe the anti-sec version.
Right.
More
right.
than the
yeah.
rest. Yeah.
Right. I think we'll continue to see indiscriminate attacks, but the lulsec element...
Totally, yeah.
My main question is this going to have a chilling effect on Anonymous? Is everyone going to be terrified that the FBI is going to be able to track them down or some other organization?
You're talking about Sabu.
Right.
First of all, let me just agree with you that it does... I've spoken to some security folks, too, and they do... And that side of things does seem stretched to very thin. But that night, after
everyone found out what had happened, it was a bit chilling, I mean, but it was very short-lived. I mean, it went straight from... Am I about to get raided because he knows things to everyone thinking, well, you know, in between every raid so far, there's been 3 or 4 months. So if I'm gonna, I've probably got a few months. I won't know for a while. And then that switched to one of the more interesting things happened. A lot of people who we haven't seen for months, for years, showing back up, who do have that same level of talent saying, you know, to be blunt, fuck this. And a hack happened that night and more are lined up. I mean, you know, their FFF is still going to continue going on. In talks with a lot of those people, it's just angered them instead of scared them. And
fuck the FBI Fridays.
Yeah, it's FFF. I do find it interesting, the response that went on for those next few days, and it's still going on. So I don't think it's going to change much. I mean, people are just going to say, well, some of us are going to get raided. It's going to happen. They've already got us. To speak to, you know, them catching people, you can look at all the major raids that have happened so far, and every one of them was an Anon or another hacker doxing someone online because they were pissed at them. Then the feds go pick up that person and turn them, and then that person helps them. Because the FBI actually don't have the resources or, in a lot of cases, the talents. Even if they're only script kiddies, they still don't have the talents to go find these people. They use other Anons against them, and it's the only way they're finding them. And it's an interesting thing to watch.
We should wrap it up. We're definitely getting the get out of here.
A couple things. The movie is showing at 2 o'clock downstairs in the Vimeo still, right?
Vimeo, which is Exhibition Hall 2, I believe.
And Cole, you're at 3:30, right? Which room?
It's up at the Sheraton.
At the Sheraton?
I'm not sure which
room. Let's go listen to Cole talk.
At 12:30, Matthew Prince from Cloudflare, who was basically securing Lulz Security's website the whole time it was up during those 50 days, is talking over at the Sheraton, too, all about hosting, you know, and helping to protect Lulz Security's website. So if anyone wants to hear that straight from the guy who did it all.
He tangled with
he had to tangle with the FBI for all this, too. Yeah. So 12:30 if you want to rush to it.
And come see the movie. 3 more screenings. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.